Hey everyone, we got a Joe Rogan episode. That's right, 2 hours of sales and business advice coming at you with many, many lessons that you want to make sure you learn. Don't forget to text me at 949-298-2905. That's 949-298-2905 and let me know what your biggest takeaway was.
This is Entrepreneurs the Playbook.
I grew up with a single mom and 6 kids. Right, with one objective in life, and that was to be rich. I had simple philosophy of I want to be rich because I was poor and my mom, only time we weren't happy, a great mom. My siblings are parents' wet dreams. They went to Harvard, Penn, Columbia. They're extraordinary students. I was born with, I hope, the same intelligence, but not the drive to be a good student. I wanted to be a football player. God blessed me with all of this to be a football player. So I probably should have stuck to be a student. But I wanted to be rich because I would catch my mom crying over money. It was that simple. And so I set my heart at 5 years old. My dad left that I was going to buy my mom a house and buy my mom a car. I lived in a 2-bedroom apartment with 6 kids, 5 boys and a girl, and really happy. So I don't look to be a victim because I look at kids with tons of money and they're so unhappy. And I had no money, but I had a really happy childhood other than this problem of not having money. So I figured I'd be rich. And I made that my goal in life. My whole ends, anything that was in my mind, I attached my happiness to being rich. So no matter what happened that I achieved, it still wasn't good enough until I was rich. I initially wanted to be a football player. I worked really hard at it. One of the things I learned was that if you focus in on something, you make it your intention, and you give everything that you have, I was in control of my destiny. At 5 years old, I was in control of my destiny. I listened to anybody else. You can imagine how many people looked at me and said, you're never going to be a professional football player. And it happened again and again, every single level of football that I played. But I ended up getting a scholarship to play football in college. I could run really scared, faster than angry people, I guess. And it did help that I had a really big mouth. So with 2-bedroom apartment, I learned to make some serious moves through that apartment with my older brothers when I talked trash to them. And so that helped me when I got on a football field, it seemed really big. But as I tell the story, my first college football game, they put me at the bullet on the kickoff team because that's where the fastest kids go. And I flew down there. And sure enough, I was down there right when the ball came to the carrier. He caught it, and I thought, okay, here we go, NFL, right? I'm going to show everyone I could play this game. And I pounded that running back. The next thing I knew, at 147 pounds, I was flying backwards like this, and the running back actually stepped on me and just kept going. At that point, I realized that I should have listened to my mom. Her philosophy was always doctor, lawyer, or failure. My mom was a teacher, by the way, if you didn't consider. So that was success to her. All my siblings followed that success story. So I decided lying there on my back that I was going to be a doctor. I probably needed a doctor. later, I will give myself some credit. Later, I found out that running back, who's now a friend of mine, was Christian Okoye, who's known as the Nigerian Nightmare. He was the AFC Player of the Year the next year. So I'm sure a 147-pound Jewish kid was not a problem for him. He's also an Olympic hammer thrower, and I think I weighed less than the hammer. But I did. I decided I'd be a doctor. And as soon as football season was over, my oldest brother was doing his residency at UCLA at Mount Sinai. So I asked if I could go over to visit him to talk about my new career as a pre-med student. And this is important because there's a lot of young people that have dreams about what they want to be. Later on in life, I ran the most notable sports agency in the whole world. They made a movie about my sports agency called Jerry Maguire. But I still today have so many kids, 18 years old, just like me, come up to me and say, Mr. Melcher, I want to be just like you. I want to be a sports agent. And I know that they don't know what it's like. And in fact, when I wanted to be a doctor, I went to visit my older brother in the hospital, and the first thing I said to him was, man, I hate hospitals. He almost fell over in his chair. He goes, Dave, you're pre-med. You hate hospitals. You want to be a doctor. What are you talking about? I go, I want to be a sports doctor. You know, I'll be on the field. I'm not going to be in a hospital. He goes, you know, like, you have to be in a hospital when you're a doctor to learn how to be a doctor before you can get on a field. I was like, oh, really? Some of you that are a little older, may have had that experience with younger people that have great aspirations. But my brother told me the lesson that I'll never forget that changed my life. Write this one down. He said, be more interested than interesting. Be more interested than interesting. So anything in my life from that point on, I started realizing there was more to the story if I looked into it. There was more to ask for. One more question, one more thing that I could learn. And that was my true power, was interest, focus, attention to what I was doing. The people that I started meeting, I started asking questions. How does that work? How did you do that? What was your biggest mistake? What is that like? Saved me a ton of time. So I immediately realized after speaking to my brother what a doctor did, that I better now become a lawyer, because the other choice was a failure. So I studied really hard, went to law school, was more interested than interesting in law school. And when I graduated law school, it was a recession. It was the early 90s. And I had two job offers. Those job opportunities were because I worked so hard. Right? It wasn't luck. I worked really hard to have two opportunities. One was to be an oil and gas litigator, and it paid a lot of money. More money than I ever really dreamed of coming from where I came from. And the other job offer was in something called the internet. I know some of you with your arms crossed or something go, what are you talking about, something called the internet? Yes, that's how old I am. Now, most people didn't know when I got that job offer to sell legal research online, what online was. I was more like that movie where it's like on the line, or right? It was actually .edu when I started in the internet. DOS, you may not know what that is. 9600 baud modems. If you look up how fast that is, you'll realize that patience is a virtue. You could walk away for half a day and come back and get your search done. Right? And remember the spinning wheel for hours and hours. Anyway, so I went to my mom, my trusted advisor, and I said, Mom, what should I do? Should I be an oil and gas litigator, or should I sell legal research online? Without blinking, my mom, who cares more about me than any of you and still does, said, David, you need to be a real lawyer, because this internet thing's a fad. Lesson number two, write this one down. It's a very valuable lesson, no matter what age you are. A lot of times people think this is for younger people, but I think sometimes it's really for the older ones. Just because somebody loves you does not mean they give you good advice. I can't tell you how many times in my life I took advice from my family, friends, associates who care more about me than sometimes I cared about myself, and I ended up resenting them because I manifested exactly what they wanted for me. Because they cared about me, but I resented them. I think more parent-to-child relationships are ruined because we take their advice about things they don't know anything about. My mom was a second grade teacher. In the early 90s, knew nothing about the internet. But she did know about lawyers. She was surrounded by the rich parents at her private school where she was teaching for $17,000 a year, and they drive up in their big Mercedes paying $30,000 for their kid to go there. You know, probably wondering why she had 20 kids in her class at 30 grand and they were paying her 17 grand to teach them, right? But what'd she think? Oh, my son needs to be a lawyer because I want him driving up. And this internet, that's risky, I think. So I, at that time, made a critical decision and I hedged my bet, right? It wasn't a brave decision, I hedged my bet. What I said was, you know what? I think the internet's not gonna be a fad. I know I can sell. Speaking of which, because I know this is important, skills, knowledge, and desire are so important to your future. The reason I got hired, the company that hired me was the world's largest legal publisher in books. You've all seen them in the back of commercials. They have keys on them. Black's Law Dictionary, cases, codes, everything was published by them. They actually did 2 weeks of training just for antitrust laws so that you didn't screw up the monopoly that they had created way back then. True. Well, I felt that this was a huge opportunity. And the reason they hired me, though, was not because I was top of my law class. They were looking for someone with at least 4 years of litigation experience because they felt like that would be good sales experience if you could sell a jury for 4 years and be a winner. But the reason they hired me was interesting is in college, I needed money. So at night, I sold what were called educational systems. For those of you old enough, what it was they were buying leads from hospitals of newborn baby parents. And you would go in there and you would sell, you know, the Pip and Sis books, encyclopedias, and every month they would send you new books until your kid was 18. And you would prey upon the emotions of a brand new parent saying, the most valuable thing you can invest in is your children's education. There's no such thing as the internet back then. I'd finance out that for life for those people. And I was the top sales rep while I was in college to do that. So I made really good money selling encyclopedias. Then in law school, I wake up early, which I think is something everyone should strive to do. Waking up early, just this is the way Unplug goes. People ask me all the time, how do you wake up at 4 a.m. every morning? Because I don't worry about waking up at 4 a.m. I worry about what I'm doing the day before. That's the thing people don't realize. They're so focused on setting their alarm. Wait, what I do is I concentrate on what I'm doing today. So what do I do today to wake up at 4 o'clock tomorrow morning? Right? I'm not doing cocaine anymore. I'm not drinking anymore. Right? Those things made it very difficult to wake up at 4 a.m. What if you want to sleep, right? Well, I could just stay up till 4 a.m. But yeah, to do that, I also realized one thing about sleep, that 24 hours a day is what we're all given. But 24 hours is a man-made construct. There's no such thing of time. It's a man-made construct. And so if I looked at time as a man-made construct and said, I've been given this 24 hours of activity, then I want to be as productive and accessible with that activity as I can. So everything I do when I gear my activity is towards productivity and accessibility. Productivity is obvious, right? Efficiency, effectiveness, and statistical success in what we want to achieve in the consistent, persistent pursuit of our potential. Potential decided by priorities in which are decided upon our values, personal, experiential, giving, and receiving values. I'll go over some of this later. But as I'm on that trajectory, I think to myself, how productive am I being in that day? It's amazing how many people, who here sleep 6 hours a night? 7, 8. Who here has studied sleep as much as they've studied work? Interesting, right? But you're guaranteed a third of your life is going to be spent sleeping. How come you're not studying how productive and accessible you can be on your sleep? What's accessibility? How accessible am I to others? And 2, how am I accessing what I need? Information, help, love, power, whatever it is. And guess where, in my opinion, I access the most that I need? When I'm sleeping, when I'm out of my own way, when my ego is non-existent and only my subconscious and unconscious mind is at work. And so I spend as much time focusing on how productive and accessible am I going to be with that time, right? In the same efficiencies. I started like you, 8 hours, came down through studying it to 7, down to 6, down to 5. But it all starts with what I'm doing here today. I do not go to sleep. It used to drive my wife crazy because I used to be a big manipulator, not a motivator, right? I'd lie, cheat, steal, oversell, back-end sell. That's how I made over $100 million before I was 32. That's the truth. I didn't have any bad intent. Like I gave a ton of money to charity, but that's how I learned to sell. I was a manipulator. But when I learned about productivity and started studying everything about how I can be of service. So when I was a manipulator, I'd tell everybody, well, I go to bed at 11 and wake up at 4. The truth is, I try to stay up to 11 because that's how I live my life. That's my goal. I don't go to sleep. My goal is to try to stay up until 11. What do you mean? That's easy to do. Not if you're providing value. Not if you shift the paradigm. Not if from the time you wake up, you pray to God, may God put 10 people in front of me that I can help at least. Let me just provide value all day long. Trust the universe that everything's going to come back for me. Not as a trade, but in full faith. And that word faith I'll talk about a lot. I don't care what religion you are. I see myself as a spiritual being, not a religious being. But I have faith. I have faith that I'm providing value from the time I wake up. And if you do that, you will have no energy left. You will sit there sometimes. People will laugh at you because, the worst moment of losing my energy was I had my laptop. My wife was lying down on the couch. I had my laptop. I'm trying to get through the hundreds of emails because I literally answer them all myself. And next thing I know, I hear, fuck! I'm like, what? I fell asleep and my laptop dropped on my wife's head. And she's always telling me, put the laptop down, you're falling asleep. No, I'm not. That's when you know you're living your life the right way, when you're providing so much value. You can't stay awake. But yet, every morning, I know, why do I wake up? Because that's my routine. At 4 a.m., I'm there. Yes, there are some days I go and pass out at 8:30. Some days it's 10:30. And hopefully, I get to 11. And I do sometimes. But my point is, productivity and accessibility, think about time as activity. Activity. People, who here works? Raise your hand if you work. None of you work, by the way. We're going to change that right now. Another great lesson for you. Nobody in here works. Let's change our perspective to life. Work is horrible. Give me some adjectives about work. Anyone, raise your hand if you give me an adjective about how you feel about work. What does work mean to you?
Commitment.
Sounds like a really hard word. Here's a book, at least, for being the first question. Give me another adjective that feels, yeah.
Sucks.
Yeah. A lot of people, go ahead.
Getting things done.
Submissive.
Monotonous.
Right. All, you can hear the energy of those words, most of them. Let me change that real quick for you. I'll change your life. And it will. Here's work. There is 24 hours of activity. There's activity you get paid for and activity you don't get paid for. And what I'm here to teach you is to maximize the amount of activity in a day that you get paid for. Believe it or not, there are people that get paid for sleeping. I know that sounds funny. I use this as my example because one of my dreams was to play second base for the San Diego Padres. And today I can afford it, but I would pay the O'Malley family $1 million if they would let me play second base for the Padres next year. $1 million cash, I'll wire it into their account right now. Meanwhile, they pay $2 million for someone else to play second base right now. So there's a $3 million net for the Padres. And the best thing about the Padres for me is I can guarantee that they won't do any worse than they did last year. If I'm a businessman, at least I got a shot, right?
Yeah.
So who's working? Me or the Padres' true second baseman? Is he working or am I working? Why? Because he's getting paid for it? No, there's no work, right? It's in our head. How many people here would pay money to do something like that? Right? Who here would pay money to do something that they dream of? And how many people get paid for doing what you dream of? I get paid for doing what people dream of. I just came back from the Super Bowl. I made 7 figures at the Super Bowl. Anybody want to come with me? And I promise you, I don't see it as work. But the problem is we create limiting beliefs in our mind with certain words that we have. Believe it or not, words are so powerful that in the earliest days, I study history, by the way. And I know that sounds boring. Only one reason to study history. The reason to study history is that human nature never changes. And if you want to be happy, learn human nature. If you want to be successful, financially successful, learn human nature. It's a form of awareness. If you know human nature, I know how to get you to say yes. I can help you. All types of human nature is so important to study. So study history. When they tell you to study history, just say, good. And look at it. I loved law school because I learned more about human nature by reading all the screwed up cases in law school. That was my favorite part. But we got to redefine work. There is no such thing as work. You can infuse purpose into anything. I'll give you another example real quick. I hated taking the trash out. Anyone else hate taking the trash out? There we go. Good. I actually hated taking the trash out. I manifested what I called bad trash karma. And I'm serious. So listen to this. I grew up with, you know, four brothers and a sister. And for some reason, I was always the one my mom asked to take the trash out. And I hated it so much that, and some of you may have done this, like you're like, oh, fuck. And then you end up like slamming the trash too hard so then it spills and you end up, right? I promise, the karma just kept coming because if there was anything leaking in the bag, it would drip on me. If anyone was dumb enough, which we were, to throw glass away, guess who got cut? Right? That's my trash karma. So then I figure I'm going to college. Cool. No problem. I'm the smallest guy in my fraternity, so guess who they pick on to take out the fraternity trash? And I will tell you, there's nothing nastier than fraternity trash, especially in the old days before we had all this liability issues. You don't know what is in there. I do, because I wore it half the time or cut myself or, you know, old pull tab. I hated those beer things. They used to pull off metal steel things that would cut you worse than a paper, right? Anyway, I carried an energy in my mind about trash. And it continued on. God blessed me with three daughters. So guess who can, right? I figured, oh, I'm going to have these kids. They're going to take my trash out, right? I got three daughters that don't weigh more than 100 pounds, right? And they're so beautiful. And it's like, how can I, and they wear beautiful clothes. And, you know, I'm like, oh, how can I make them take it out, right? But I learned the most valuable lesson in my life about changing my perspective and controlling my perspective is I looked at the trash differently and said to myself, instead of hating this trash, instead of it abusing me and having attacking thoughts and it attacking me, what if I shifted the paradigm of my trash and said to myself, what do I want in my life that I don't have? And the one thing is, because I'm very active, was I could always use time to think about what makes me happy. Because the more happiness I can have, the more I allow it to come through me for the benefits of others. In other words, I can empower you to be happy, which is my life goal and mission, is to empower others to be happy. Because when people are happy, there's no sickness, there's no poverty. Everything is awesome. Not to steal a phrase, but it is. So I looked at the trash and I said, from now on, when I see trash, I'm going to take it out and I'm going to think to myself what makes me happy. Instantly, I like taking the trash out. I would volunteer to take the trash out. At the office, I'd take, right? Because it meant to me I'd have the time. And then all these other good things happened to me. You know, I'd be at friend's house. Says, oh, let me take that out. Meanwhile, they think I'm, you know, I could hear the wife. Oh, my God, your husband's amazing. Yeah. Right? I mean, just to tell you as a married guy, if another wife tells your wife how amazing you are, you are in. Yes. Right? It's like the validity statement. You know, you want to increase your, you know, intimate time with your wife. You want to look sexier than ever. Have another lady tell you how great your husband is, right? It's like, oh, shit, my friend thinks he's hot. Oh, yeah. Perfect. But that all comes from trash. They literally, and here's the coolest thing about how I shifted my unconscious competency about trash, right? Unconscious energy and genetics about trash. Activating and deactivating certain DNA, shifting my energy. All of a sudden, the coolest thing about the trash to me was I actually have a 17-year-old daughter who all of a sudden walked over and said, oh, I'll take that out for you. Now, I know it's because the energy that I carry, that she's like, you know, it's the same energy as when I went up on the roof and jumped in the pool and all three of my kids were like, can I do that? Why? Because my energy, they wanted to feel what I was feeling, right? And the tree has no branches. We're all connected. And kids don't listen to you, but they watch you. Kids don't listen to you, but they watch you, just like other people. And I'll get to, since this is a social media platform of building your empire through a stage theory, I feel the same way, because I'm the old man of the Instagram. I have one of the biggest followings for my TV show, my podcast, and even my Instagram, which is 1 year old. I know that people are watching me. They're not listening to me. It's not what I say, it's how I say it. I think it's really funny because one of the biggest things that we'll talk about today is gratitude. And I've had people tell me, oh my God, you know, I spoke 7,000 franchisees at Denny's on stage, Magic Johnson and I, right? And they lined up to tell me, these franchisees, oh my God, you're a genius. I'm going to say thank you every day. And I'm thinking to myself, how can this be possible? Like, literally. And I've actually had trolls on the internet too go, you stole gratitude from Gary V, you fake, you fraud. I'm like, I stole gratitude, bro? I'm older than Gary V. How did I steal gratitude? My grandmother, I think probably the first lesson I learned was, say thank you. Yeah. Like, are you kidding me? But I will tell you right now that if you want to change your life, out of every single lesson I'm going to teach you today, everything you're going to hear, say, do, think, believe, feel, the thing that will change your life the most is if you can just say thank you before you go to bed and when you wake up. Anyone here think they can say thank you before they go to bed and when they wake up? In fact, if you say it 30 straight days, some people argue 21, I say 30, neural pathways are formed in your mind and it becomes a habit. So if you can say it for 30 straight days, you can change your life before you go to bed and when you wake up. Here's the saddest thing that I know. I speak in front of thousands of people. By tonight, half of you won't say thank you. By tomorrow morning, another half of you won't say thank you. And within 3 days, almost all of us won't say thank you. That's how far our ego gets in our way. We're so resistant to the truth. I have studied physics, quantum physics, and metaphysics. I am on the Transformational Leadership Council with Jack Canfield and Bob Proctor and some of the great Beckwith and the greatest minds that you guys have seen, all who all agree with me that gratitude is the most powerful thing in the world that shifts your perspective and gives you control of your life, makes everything better, but yet we're so far in our way that most of us won't say thank you. I will tell you, to make you feel better, that I was on stage teaching this and it still took me 9 months myself to say thank you every single day for 30 straight days. That's why habits are so important. I don't work, my goal in life is to have a habit machine. What I'd like to build through my skills, knowledge, and desire is to be able to say, oh, I want to stop eating bread. Oh, no problem. Right through the habit machine. Instantly, I stop doing it. Whatever it would be. Wouldn't that be nice? Imagine how consistent, persistent in the pursuit of our potential we could be, which is the secret to life, because you get exponential value by doing things every day. Right? 2 minutes of meditation a day is worth more than an hour every Saturday, I guarantee. If anyone plays golf, I promise you, if you practice golf every day for 30 minutes, you'll be far better than if you play golf for 6 hours every Saturday with your friends. No doubt. In fact, if you play golf Saturdays at 6 hours with your friends, by the end of the year, you might be worse than when you started, but I guarantee you'll be better if you do 30 days every single day. It's the way the cells in our body work. It has a memory. It goes right into our subconscious, creates neural pathways that create efficiencies, which then increase or decrease our limiting beliefs that then go into the unconscious competency, the energy that we carry, the genetics that we have, your personality traits, your characteristics, your obsessions and addictions that have been handed down by four generations into a code that you can activate or deactivate. That's how people heal. Why is it that some people can do the exact same thing and not heal and other people heal? Because they deactivate the DNA. That's what I want to teach you. I want you to be a human magnet for everything that you want, to have this habit machine. I want you to be able to attract everything that you want. We've all seen these guys. Some of us are older, but I could never understand. I have a friend, I'm not going to say his name because this shit's taped. But I have a friend, I swear he's the biggest idiot I know. No, I'm serious. Like, he is ignorant, right? So we all know what that means. That's the polite way of saying what he is. But he's ignorant, not educated, which usually go hand in hand, but not necessarily. He doesn't do the, he lies, he manipulates, but he has a hugely successful business. He has a wonderful wife, wonderful kids, and he has this life that seems to be great. And I always think to myself, how is it with what I teach that can be possible? Right? Are you making bad causes? You're going to get, well, first of all, I always go back to one thing. Time's a man-made construct. Not me to judge or put conditions on other people, nor to determine when your karma is going to hit, right? When your energy. Time's infinite. So it may not appear right now. You wonder, you know, this person, oh, he's going to get his. Look, truth vibrates the fastest. Truth vibrates the fastest. It vibrates the fastest. It always comes out. Sooner or later, it's going to come out for everyone. And it's not my job to judge. He may not be the person I perceive him to be. But I believe the reason, for example, he can attract wealth is that he has an unconscious competency. No matter what he does, we just know these people. I'm one of those people. I attract money. So I can't teach you exactly to do what I do, because it's not normal to come 9 months out of law school and become a millionaire. And that's what I did. 9 months out of law school, after taking the job in the internet, I was a millionaire. Bought my mom a house, a car, and myself, paid off the law loans and bought one big screen TV, which at the time was $8,000 and bigger than that piano. You couldn't carry it anyway. Now it's about $80. The way technology works. I then parlayed that into working in the Silicon. We sold that company for $3.4 billion when I was 26 years old in 1995. $3.4 billion went up to the Silicon Valley, raised $169 million, learned how to be a VC, learned how to raise money, learned about that side of the business, and started a middleware company which transcoded the internet onto WAP phones and Palm 7s. Some of you might know what those are. When I was raising all the money and really getting involved in the technology side of XML and tagging XML and transcoding, it hit me, wow, And this is an important lesson. While I was doing this, raising 169 million, Texas Pacific Group, Amerindo, Sequoia, HP Ventures, Accenture Ventures, stroking $10 million checks like they're nothing, right off of a business plan of this great idea of transcoding the internet onto a WAP phone. And we had E-Trade as our client, Alaska Airlines. It hit me when I was raising money, as I was learning, I'm like, wait a second. Why do you have to transcode this? Why won't someday would you just have a computer in your hand? And I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm a fraud. Because I knew that was the truth. That as I was taking money from people and raising money and helping sell people on how great this technology that works today, you know, it would be like selling, you know, 8-track tapes, knowing that DVDs and CDs would exist and then MP4 players. And there's lots of people that do that all day long. All day long, common sense tells us this is not going to last. What I want you to do is take that perspective about social media. Really think about it in the form of how we make money off of social media and what's going to last and what's not going to last. Take yourself a step above and start really thinking just with common sense, what's going to last and what's going to not last. And when I always look at that, it comes down to three things. The one thing that always lasts is content. Content will always last. It's perpetual. Good content, the ones that vibrate the fastest, will always do well. Then you have access, right? We need to access the content, right? Data, we have to access it. From the creation of time to 2003, the amount of data that was created is equal to the amount of data that's created every 2 hours today. So your content better vibrate really fast. And the reason I tell you that is because I'm going to take you through traditional business into how to utilize today's access that we have. Stuff like Instagram, that's access, Snapchat, LinkedIn. But in the end, if you can't stand on the stage and you don't do real business, how are you going to make money? The third component is mediums. Mediums are the hardware. And I eventually ended up, because of this idea that I had, being CEO of the world's first smartphone. Back then, they weren't called smartphones. They were called convergence devices. So I was the CEO of something called PC-ePhone, the first Samsung manufactured phone, Windows CE device. I was blessed to work with Bill Gates and all these great guys. But what I learned in the medium side of things, just like my TV story, is they change. It's the shortest lived business in the world. It's the scariest business in the world. Who's the biggest competitor to iPhone? Anyone know? Samsung. Who said that first? You got a book. Good. Brian? Is that? Yeah, Brian here. You're wrong, though. The biggest competitor to the iPhone is the iPhone. Let me prove it. Who here has an iPhone 4? You know how scary it is? In that business, the medium business, because not only do you have to worry about Samsung, and Samsung's worrying about the 9 blowing up and having every Southwest flight going, oh, if you own a Galaxy, throw it away, because you can't bring it on this plane because it'll blow it up. Oh, that's great marketing. But meanwhile, even while that was going on, iPhone's sitting there going, oh my God, what are we going to do to get these people to buy a 7 from a 6 or an S to a, right? Mediums, whoa. Think about it. Take ourselves back into human nature and history. What difference does it make what stage I'm standing on? Right? Go to New York and Times Square and watch a musical today. You know, go see Mean Girls. They have like, I think, 3,000 TVs that change the set and it's 3D. I mean, it's extraordinary. But yet, people will still sell out to stand on a stage like this. And the truth is, when I'm standing on a stage like this, millions of people are going to watch this. And it'll be chopped up in music and caption, and people are going to change. I'm going to change their lives of people I've never met before. And they may not even see me. They might be smart, like the beautiful girls in the back that said, oh, I know your voice. Right? Because they listen to me. They listen to me. So understand content, access, and medium if you want to monetize the internet, whether it's mobile or not. Understand content. and understand the purpose of content, which I'm going to take you through, because a lot of people here work with Euphoria, right? The great nutrition company. And sales seems to be, in my opinion, a very important thing in life, has always been to me. In fact, the reason I got fired, I used to say I retired. The reason I got fired from the Samsung job was because I was just a salesperson. So as we became the second largest manufacturer of phones in the world, and Sarbanes-Oxley was there, and running people and management and scaling a business, I was great to sell an idea, to raise money. I was a person who could open really well. I could stimulate interest. I could transition that interest and share a vision really well. But I never learned how to manage and develop a vision. I believed throughout most of my career, before I lost everything, I believed before most of my career that I was 80% done when I made a sale, when I shared a vision. 80% done. Nothing could be farther from the truth. You're 20% done. What really sells is managing and developing a vision. That's what makes it thrive. Managing and developing, being more interested than interesting. If anyone doesn't believe me, just think a part of managing and developing a vision. I would say, you know, I tell people all the time, 20% is selling and 80% is managing and developing. Like, what do you mean? I'm like, just take, for example, collecting. 20% is closing a deal, 80% is collecting the money. Anyone that knows selling, hear me live. Literally, this is big, big stuff. So let's talk about how do we share a vision to start. Number one, the key to life and content is stimulating interest. So when you see all my videos, when you see anything else, I never sell. Anyone comes on and wants my book online, I give it for free and pay for shipping. But the difference between me and everybody else that I see on the internet is I don't sell anything, but I make money. Weird, huh? Everybody else seems to be selling and they ain't making shit because it's not going to thrive. They're not managing the developing vision. They might, some of them that are lucky, very few, might make short-term cash, but it's not going to last because you're not managing the developing vision. What do I mean? I could sell you something, all of you. I could tell you all kinds of different manipulative things without telling you the entire truth and go through. But if when I send you my Euphoria package, it's not wearing well because it's vibrating slower than my sales pitch, right? My stimulating interest and transitioning and vision is far greater than what you get. How many times are you going to buy mine and who are you going to sell for me? Because exponential sales happens when you meet expectations, when the vibration is equal to. I gave away more books than anyone, I think, in America last year and paid for shipping. I also sold those books. I sold 5 times as many books as I gave away, which is about 20 times more than the previous year when I tried to sell the book. I fought people on the internet. They say, I really want to buy your book. No, 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 let me mail it to you. Give me your address. I'll pay for shipping. No, no, I really appreciate everything you do online. I want to buy it. Where can I buy it? I said, I'm not going to tell you. You have to find out for yourself. But if you give me your address, I'll mail it to you and pay for shipping. And then what do? I send 2 books. Give one to your friend. And they're signed. And then they read it, and the content vibrates faster. The expectation's here. And they read it, and they're like, whoa. Then they don't ask me. They go buy 5. They go buy 10. They give them as gifts. They tell their friend, this is the best book I've ever read. And that's why it's sold. Because I'm focused in on the content that I'm providing, and then I have a downstream of how am I going to monetize it off the truth, not off of motivation, not manipulation. So to stimulate interest, it's so funny. I'll give you a classic example. How many people cold call? Okay. Funny, all the older people. I pick up a phone, damn right. Good, I think that sells. In person, on the phone, via email and media. 4 ways to sell. Simple questions, how can I be of service? Do you know anyone that could help me? I'll go through that because that'll change your life. It's a matrix of how to get people to do what you want and to help them. But moreover, I'm amazed. I have trained thousands and thousands of people how to cold call. number one trick I have of cold calling is called the alter ego effect. A guy named Todd Herman wrote a book about it. I did it before he wrote the book, but I'm amazed by it. The reason people can't cold call is they have a whole bunch of ego issues that make them feel inferior. They're afraid. It's very simple why people can't cold call. So let me fix that for you real quick. Who here is afraid of cold calling? So if none of you are afraid of cold calling, you're not cold calling, you're morons. I hate to call you that. Because if you're not afraid to cold call, you should be cold calling.
Can you call it warm calling?
Call it whatever you want to call it, but you should be calling people asking them for help. You should be calling people every day asking them for help and also asking how you can be of service. They go hand in hand. But let me tell you, alter ego is very simple. John and I, test it out with anyone you know. Let's take an hour, John and I will cold call on our own. Dave Meltzer, I'm with Euphoria, here's a great thing, blah, 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 I'd love to have you in. Just stimulate interest. John does it. We would come up with the statistical success that each of us has. I promise you this, if we took the next hour and I called and said, hi, this is John, and he called and said, hi, this is David, we would double our success. That's how far our ego's in our way. We have to have an alter ego effect. So understand, if you want to take your ego out of any sales process, you either have to change your name or change your identity. Because your mind, body, and soul can't work that way. If you're somebody else, your ego is completely detached, and your ego is what gets in your way from everything, from saying thank you to selling to closing. Because you have the need to be offended, the need to be guilty, right, inferior, superior, especially when we're selling. All of these emotions happen all the time. There's a fear of loss. And if I can take you out of that with an alter ego effect, you'll be so much more successful. You know, in my mind, I'll put a business card of somebody else in my pocket. And even though I'm using my same name, I might not bring up my name. I'll just pretend I'm him. Right? I'm Derek, my COO. Man, how do you stay so relaxed and close? And how can you ask so confidently and offer help? And because I'm not me, man. It works. The other thing I think is funny about cold calling is how much time is wasted on leaving messages. When you're stimulating interest to make a sale, if somebody answers, you need to know what your objective is. Right? If somebody answers, I know my objective. I want to stimulate interest to transition it. And there can be a variety of ways to do that, right? Come in for a meeting, send collateral material. There's all kinds of transitioning of interest that occurs. But here's the biggest waste of time that I found in sales. People that stimulate interest when somebody doesn't answer. There's only two things that can happen. Somebody can answer and somebody doesn't answer. Have a plan for both. Take everything out of it. Have the most statistically successful thing happen when somebody answers. What is your objective, though, when you have to leave a message, when someone doesn't answer? Do you know what your objective is? It's the same every single time.
Stimulate interest.
Close.
Get a call back.
Thank you. You get a book for that.
Millions
and millions, give it to somebody. Millions and millions of dollars are wasted because people don't understand that when they call, there's only one objective. Unless it's your mother-in-law, then what's the objective? Get her not to call you back, right? Exactly, you nailed it. Not keep your book. Right? But think about it, how much time? Example, how many people have been left a sales message on a recording? Same as an email. Cold call is the same as email. Anybody ever been getting an email that has a long sales message on it? Mm-hmm. How many times have you balked off of a voice message that's selling you? Said, oh shit, I'm going to order that right now. Okay, think about it. This blows my mind economically. How many millions of dollars are spent today of people leaving those messages? And that's not just for money for profit, it's nonprofits too. That one makes me the maddest. Oh shit, I'm gonna donate to St. Jude now. Right? Child has cancer. No, get him to call you back so we can use the biggest capabilities that we have to transition interest. We can now have an opportunity to share our vision. And how do we share vision? Shift the paradigm of value. Talk about the value that we have. Here's the reasons, the impact, the capability. And what I teach is I never tell you any features and benefits. I never tell you the reasons, impacts, and capability. All I do is emotionally connect you, right? Emotionally connect you. Oh, Wonder Brett, what is that?
It's a grower of marijuana cannabis.
Oh, fuck, I love marijuana. How about you? Right, when we can get to something that we love or like or don't like, and the cool thing is, everybody wants to plaster something on what they wear, right? So just be curious, or just say, I love those socks, right? What team is that?
Real Madrid.
Oh, Real Madrid, my favorite. Do you like them?
Yeah.
What do you like about it?
Like, they're my favorite soccer team, and, like, there's a lot of, like, good players on
Who's your favorite player?
Probably...
Ronaldo?
Gareth Bale.
Oh. What position does he play?
He plays left wing.
Left wing. Do you play soccer?
Yeah.
Do you play left wing?
Yeah.
Oh, I bet you'll be better than him someday. Emotionally connect to both his mom and him, right? Emotionally connect to both his mom and ask what people like, what they don't like about something. So when I'm selling, and you're a nutrition selling company with Euphoria, right? I'll ask, what are you doing today? Everyone's doing something with nutrition, right? I may tell them that the biggest mistake I made in my life was I prioritized my family over everything else. That was the dumbest thing I've ever done. And 2 years ago, 47 pounds ago, I decided I better prioritize my health. So I started telling my family, you know what, I'm going to the gym. I'm not gonna go do that. I told my work, hey, I'm leaving to go to the gym. I'm not gonna stay here. And my business has never been better. And the likelihood of me being around for my family and my business has never been better. Now we're emotionally attaching, right? And what are the reasons that you do that, right? What do you like about it? What don't you like about it? Because the cool thing is you go through reasons, impacts, and capabilities with people about what they do today and what they like about it and what they don't like about it. You can easily say, oh, you don't like that? Well, what if I was able to do this with you, had something that was actually programmatically done that looked at your DNA, looked at you as an individual, and customized a program that was fit for you? Because believe it or not, there's some people that they can eat bread all day long and lose weight. And there's some people that can eat sugar all day long and lose weight. And some people, they can exercise from now until midnight and not lose weight. There's all kinds of things that are going in with our programming. Now I'm teaching to deactivate and activate, but from what you told me, can you see any reason why you won't want to try this? Because you've told me everything. All I've done is ask questions. What do you do today? What do you like about it? What don't you like about it? And then it's a lawyerly thing that I learned to do. You ask an open-ended question, and then you use closing questions to narrow it down to the capabilities that your product has. Would it help you? Like, if I'm selling black pants, you know, what kind of pants do you like? Oh, what do you like about those? Well, I really like, you know, this, that they come in all these different, what's your favorite color? Oh, black, oh, great. From what you told me, I have custom pants that you could just go ahead and use your iPhone to take measurements, and you told me that the biggest part that won't fit you are your thighs because you actually work out and have bigger thighs than most people. Your calves are smaller, or whatever, right? I can sell anything. Why? Because I'm more interested than interesting. And I'm looking at just three things all the time. Reasons, which are emotionally connections. Impact, which is quantifiable. And the capabilities are of my product. And it also saves you a ton of time and money for one reason, because if the reasons, impacts, and capabilities are not aligned with what your product does, you're not gonna waste your time what? Chasing them. Because you're more interested than interesting. No, don't worry. Right? For me, I wanna get to the no's more than even the yeses. I have a rule about no's. Two rules that'll... Some of you may have heard them before, but I love them. One, the perception of no is like the alter ego. Who here likes hearing no? Yeah, good. Everyone should love no's. Let me tell you why. Change your perception. A no is a lesson, first of all. It's a miracle. It's an expansive process. But moreover, what if I told you today and could guarantee it that you were 25 no's away from getting what you want? Who here would be excited on their first no? How about your 24th no? Yes. Super excited, right? Well, I am here to tell you one thing. You're only so many no's from getting what you want. You're only so many no's. And the cool thing is, a lot of times, it's not 25. But for some reason, we'll take that first no, and there's no excitement about it. You're that much closer to getting what you want. And there's tons of people out there that you can use up to get no's for. Now, I trust the universe more than most people, and I came up with a secondary thing to shorten that process, because I know there's so many people. I'd rather spend time on people that will give me a yes faster than 25. And so what I do is I use the rule of three, the universal rule of three, which says if I'm going for a close and the first time I go for a close, you are not on the phone call, that's a no, even though I didn't get an answer. And the second time, I have a flat tire. We're going to do it in person. I have a flat tire and I don't get there. The universal second no. And the third time, I call and we have a conversation and I get blown off in like, well, I'm not really sure, if this is for me, or can I let you know in 2 weeks, or universal three no. When I get the universal third no at all times, I let them know this. Hey, I can appreciate where we're at. I just have to tell you, I have a lot of people that I need to take care of that are my current clients. I'd love to do business with you when you're ready. So when you are, just give me a call. Does that sound fair? Always use "does that sound fair" at the end of everything. It hits an emotional chord. Everyone wants fairness, doesn't need any justification. It's easy to quantify. Does that sound fair? 50% of the time when I use the universal laws of no's, my deal closes right there. Wait a second, I got time. Well, I'll call you. Oh, 50% of the time, I have to spend no more time. And guess what? The other 50% of the time, they never, ever, ever, ever call me back. And guess what I just saved? All that time, because I don't want to wait for 25 or 30 no's or 50 no's. And yes, I do, though, have once in a while someone in the universal no call me 2 years later and go, hey, I was just thinking about you. I think it's time. I trust the universe. I also trust numbers and math, that I'd rather spend my time on the most efficient, effective, statistically successful people in aligning with what I do. So if it comes to that, why would I go against what I believe in the universe, that I'm attracting the right thing when there seems to be resistance? Why not find someone with no resistance to what I'm trying to share with them? The coolest thing about the internet, and I was talking to Casey about this, because he's so far ahead of the curve and he doesn't know it. All you need is 0.00125% to be a millionaire for the rest of your life. Never have to work again. Let me explain to you that what that means. There's 8 billion people on the internet. 8 billion. If I was 18 years old and I had 100 followers on my 19th birthday, I would be ecstatic, just like the 24th no. And the problem with the internet right now is everybody's trying to force things, right? Because there's no way, and no offense to him, there's no way his content is vibrating like mine. There's no way. There's no way. I know what I was like at 18, and I could have been super duper everything at 18, but my vibration was not where it's at because I hadn't lost $100 million. I hadn't worked for Lee Steinberg. I hadn't had great mentors and failures and been married and had kids and all these different things that I have. We'll sit him up here unplugged. Let him go for 4 hours and keep on just feeding you lessons. Where do you think these came from? Just years, that's all? I'm not a fucking genius. Right? I just have an ability to articulate what has happened in my life to simplify it for you so you can get a few little nuggets and be like, man, 3 rules of no, this works. One thing I forgot about the no's, though, just so you know, statistics. One rule about statistics. 99% of all statistics are made up. That's the only true statistic. Just remember it. 99% of all statistics are made up. That's the rule of statistics. So I don't know if it's 50% or not, but it's up there. All right. Back to content. Why is Casey so far ahead of the curve? Because if Casey turns 19 and had 100 followers, I know that through the maturation of his content and through the ability to have 100 people at 19 years old that are emotionally aligned with you, that are true followers, not bullshit bot followers, not just sub followers that, like, you know, Casey's cool, so I'm gonna give him a thumbs up, but I'm talking about 100 people. You know, the difference between Jesus Christ and Kardashian, the difference between Gary Vee or Joel Osteen and Kardashian. Joel Osteen and Gary Vee, when he asks you to rise, you'll rise. Joel Osteen asks you to rise, you'll rise. Kim Kardashian asks you to rise, you're not going anywhere, but you might buy her lipstick. But not nearly percentage-wise of what follows her. 120 million people aren't doing that. But if he can get 100 people to rise at 19, I know that those people will talk to another, but without doing anything, even any new content, which he would have, that 100 would turn into 200 by the time he's 20. The 200 would turn into 400 by the time he's 21. With no new content, the 400 would turn into 1,600. The 1,600 would turn into 1,600 times 1,600. And that 4,800 or 48,000 times 48,000 now would put him into the bonus round in the millions. And the millions would keep going. And he's still under 30. But he has to do it the right way. He has to, instead of looking and saying, I got 200 and some thousand followers that give me thumbs up and highs, right? I want people, and it's okay to have them, Casey, but you want to make sure you have 100 in what you have today that will rise for you. That will show up like this, right? That will come and rise for you. And I know it. I know where my people are because I travel a lot, and I'll say, come, I'm going to answer any questions you have for an hour. Come meet me at the Super Bowl in the lobby of this. And when I started, two people would show up. And I go to my mentor, Gary Vee, about this stuff. I have mentors about different things. He's not my life mentor, but he's my social media mentor. And I said, Gary, I'm not wasting my time anymore. Two people showed up. He said, oh, good. That's awesome. He said, because next Super Bowl, they're going to kick you out of this lobby. Because if you're resonating with two people, that's going to rise up, leave their house in the middle of the day, drive during the Super Bowl into the mess to meet you at a hotel room, next year there's going to be a lot more. And if you get those 100 right now, Casey, regardless of all the rest, go ahead, play all the rest. You can buy the followers, make yourself have 6 million, I don't care. But make sure you have the 100. Because it's 200, 1,600, 48,000, million, whatever, and now you have something. It's the reason that the best content ever still does well. The biggest influencer on the internet, Jesus Christ. He's still the number one influencer on the internet. One of the most viewed YouTube videos, 1928, I believe, Mickey Mouse Club. Go look it up, 470 million views. That's good content. That shit has gone from, you know, black and white, whatever TV that thing showed on, or I think it was flip cards originally, Steamboat Willie, black and white flip cards, right, to YouTube, Netflix. It's successful on all of them. I got four kids, 19 to 8, and it's always been the favorite. That's it. Right, you want an uprising. I look at my following, I don't look at the number. I don't look at the number. I look at how many people are rising. Right, I come here and hear, oh yeah, I know your voice. Right, I know, you know, a year ago, it scared me. I was down at Dolphin Stadium and I'm walking and a guy at the concession stand jumped over and ran at me. And I'm thinking, oh shit, he knows me from the old days. Wasn't me. Mr. Meltzer, I love your videos. Right? Now, almost every single place that I go, and John's traveling with me now, there's people. Right? I have 227,000 Instagram followers, but millions of people watch the shit.
They don't just watch, they are like,
well, they rise. And that's what matters. But I don't sell them anything. Right? I don't cheat myself. And I'm not going to cheat myself and say, hey, 200,000 people that love me, buy the high vibrating jacket. Right? This isn't my company. They didn't make this for me, but it has a message that I love. That's why I'm wearing it. But you'll never see me sell this jacket. And if you go buy this jacket, I don't know where, because I don't know who the person is that mailed it to me, but I will make no money off of it. Buy it if you like it. Right? Like, there's no commissions. But I am a businessman. I believe in profitability first, derive purpose into my profitability, and derive passion into my purpose. when I was young, and some of you may feel this way, I was one of those guys, I want to do what I love to do. I want to be passionate. You know, I love sports. Did I love selling legal research online? No. But I'll tell you what I learned is I made a shitload of money. And I infused purpose into what I was doing all of a sudden. And I had a huge passion because of what I could do with that. Another valuable lesson. Money does not buy happiness.
Sorry.
I used to say it rents the shit out of it. But that's not good enough for me to rent the shit out of happiness because that doesn't last. But what money does is it allows you to shop. Listen to me. Money allows you to shop. I'm a big profit guy. You'll never see it on the internet. Other than me empowering you to make money, I believe making money is so important because it allows you to shop. I got to shop last year by making a lot of money. And you know what I bought? I bought 2 community centers in Africa. That's good shopping. It chokes me up because I know where that lives for me. I was a multimillionaire when I was 30 years old, and I had a Ferrari and a Porsche, huge home in Rancho Santa Fe. I could shop for whatever I want, motorhome, boat, gold. I would hate to show you the picture with the goatee, the shaved head, and the gold chain. My wife cringes. There are few out there. I was shopping with the wrong stuff. You can have all the money in the world and shop for the wrong stuff and you'll be miserable. And we all know those people. They live in a world of not enough. They'll never have enough. I've lived that world. A scarce world where there's never enough. How awful is that? What I want to teach you is to make a lot of money, help a lot of people, have a lot of fun. Get profitable. Reverse engineer everything. I think if you're going to do business, doing business in its essence is making money. And including charity. If you're going to start a charity, you better be able to raise money. Then derive your purpose. Then create a passion. People have it backwards. You've got to understand the value of money. I want you to shop for what makes you happy. Will you always shop for what makes you happy? No. I used to tell people, you know, do not buy a Ferrari. Right? I thought I was on this role of telling people what to do instead of just showing them. So everyone has to experience things, right? So I tell them, don't buy a Ferrari. We're talking about your car outside. Same problem. This is why I would tell them not to buy a Ferrari. Number one, if you drive a Ferrari too much, it breaks down. If it breaks down, it's really expensive. Everything on the sucker. Two, if you don't drive it enough, it breaks down. And everything to fix is very expensive. When you drive it, you worry more about your car than the people or the places or the things that you're doing, which is not very healthy. I thought by driving a Ferrari that I would prove to everyone that I was successful and that everyone would love me. Most people thought I was an asshole. Probably gonna have to edit this video. I gotta stand behind a chair now. No. I got 4 kids, let me just tell you that. Best 30 seconds of my life. Don't laugh too hard, you're gonna reveal yourself. I had my first naked person on Instagram Live yesterday, by the way. Oh, yeah, I was like, whoa. Yeah, he'd set his camera up in the bathroom and all of a sudden I joined him live and he's like toweling himself off. I'm like, this cannot be an accident. It went viral, but chlamydia is not a flower. I'm making sure they edit this. That's all. All I'm doing is adding bullshit, so they'll never use this. And I only wear one mic to my own camera. Sorry. So we're in it to make money. And here's the interesting thing. There's three worlds. There's the first world that I feel sorry for people, the world of not enough. And what happens in a world of not enough is that you're a victim. Everything happens to you. And that's an awful state to be in. Awful place to be in. Oh, blame, shame, and justification. No accountability, right? Accountability is 2 questions. What did I do to attract it to myself? And what am I supposed to learn from it? Don't confuse accountability with liability. Liability is still who's going to pay damages for something that's done. So if I get in a car accident, I'm still interested in liability. That's why I pay my insurance. That's why there's lawyers. But I'm more interested in saying, what did I do to attract this to myself, and what am I supposed to learn from it? There's a bigger picture. You can't live in a world of not enough. You can't be a victim. If you live in a world of not enough, you're putting faith into what's not enough. And guess what we get when we put faith into what we don't want? More of what we don't want. It's the biggest mistake that people make. They don't realize that what they're putting faith into when they complain, when they go below the line and blame, shame, justification, when they worry about things, when they feel guilty, when they feel offended. You don't know you're putting faith in the wrong things, and you're going to get exactly what you want. Then there was the next world, which I lived in for a long time. Even though I was a multimillionaire at a young age, I lived in a world of just enough. Right? When my paycheck came, I had plenty, but in my mind, I was afraid that where is it going to come next month? Right? And I was buying enough, just enough. And I used this misguided positive attitude of everything happens for me. Oh, don't worry. Everything always happens for me. For me, for me. Well, guess what? I only have so many pockets. In fact, let me tell you a quick story about myself in the warning signs. You know, I know I go back to where I was, multimillionaire, got kicked out of Samsung. They paid me a lot of money to leave. So if you are going to get fired, it's nice to get paid to leave. I wish I could do that on dates. All right, so you don't like me, but can you pay for dinner? that would have been good. But everything happened for me. I had two big warning signs before I lost everything. And I lost over $100 million, so it was no joke. The first was from my father. Now, I don't talk about my father that much. And the reason I don't talk about my father that much is he left when I was 5. And my father, when he left, was my hero. Anyone here still thinks their dad's their hero? That's awesome. I do too now. But when I was 5 years old, my dad was my hero. He was much better looking than I am, rich. And the hardest part for my mom was he left at 5 and he married a girl closer to my age than him. But he didn't, back then, no child support. And so she has 6 kids living in a 2-bedroom apartment, and she has a son in there going, my dad's my hero. So, and she, I'm gonna cry, but would never say a negative word. Which is true. Unconditional love. Never a bad word. Until I was 10 years old, and my father forgot my birthday. Now, I know it might sound silly at 51 to still get choked up, but it sucked. Like, that's my hero. He lives in Houston, Texas. I was living in Akron, Ohio. Actually, I just moved to San Diego, and he forgot my birthday, and I was crushed. And so called my dad, and instead of just saying that he made a mistake, right? What he said was really damaging, because he said, I didn't forget your birthday. I just don't believe in birthdays. Which was, even at 10 years old, I was fairly intelligent. I now thought my dad was a liar, right? A manipulator, a piece of shit. And for the first time, my mom told me my dad was a liar, a manipulator, because I was so hurt. She thought she was protecting me. And I understand as a parent now why she did it. But, you know, she laid into him. So from the time I was 10 years old to the time I was 18 years old, I hated my father. I didn't talk to him very much. Went 3 years without talking to him ever. I hated him. What I learned later was I hated him because I hated him for everything I hated about myself. Everything I hated about my dad, I was. And in fact, when I was 30 years old, my dad sent me a birthday present for the first time in 25 years. Big box arrived. I'm married. It arrived with a letter saying, happy 30th birthday for my son who's most like me. Love, Dad. I started crying. I opened it up. Beautiful custom-made blazer. And the thing that touched me the most was when I put it on, it fit me perfectly. Right? Which meant he called my wife, got my sizes, had it custom-made. I was so excited, called my dad up, saying, oh, my God. And by that time, by the way, from 25 to 30, my aunt had taught me, don't change your father, learn to understand him. So we had established a relationship again. And I was feeling good. He wasn't my hero, right? I had a real view of him, but he was my father. And I really loved him. And I was so excited that we had come this far. So I call him, And I'm trying on the jacket, and I'm like, hey, thank you so much. This is the best birthday present you've ever given me. I really appreciate that you're acknowledging that you believe in birthdays and you believe in me. And I'm looking, and I started to look, you know, like what kind of jacket it is, or if it says especially made for David Meltzer's birthday or something. And I look in it, and he ripped out the entire lining and pockets. It was a very expensive jacket. And while I'm on the phone, I'm like, Dad, I'm like, are you fucking torturing me? And he's like, what? I go, the jacket's all torn up. I go, what the fuck? Is this a joke? And he goes, well, it's not to wear. I'm like, oh, I thought we were past this. He goes, no, it's hang it in your closet. I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, I want you to look at it every day to remind you. I don't want you to be just like me. He goes, I don't want you to be the richest man in the cemetery. This is going to remind you, you can't take it with you. I want you to be buried in that jacket. That was the first warning sign that I was on the wrong path. The wrong path. And the second one was my wife telling me I was on the wrong path and telling me to take stock in who I was and what I wanted to become. The hardest part about losing everything, which is still the best thing that ever happened to me, not only did it save my life, but it gave me the right perspective of value of how to live my life of service. It gave me the perspective of all the blessings that I've been given and the abilities that I had to live my life without fear, out of sight of ego. And I'll talk about how to change your trajectory. But the hardest thing I ever had to do in my entire life, and it was also the most rewarding, was I was the CEO at the time when I went bankrupt. It takes a long time to lose that much money, by the way. There's a lot of legal things that go on, a lot of lawsuits. So I was on the right path for 2 years. I was working for Lee Steinberg as the CEO of the most notable sports agency. My office looked over Newport Beach. I made good money, but I went bankrupt. And I woke up that morning realizing, because things happen really fast, and your ego and there's all these thoughts, I'm like, oh shit, I gotta go up and tell Warren Moon, my business partner, and Lee Steinberg, who hired me 2 years ago for this job because I'm Midas, and I'm the one that's supposed to know money and run a business and all the fraudulent things that I see today on Instagram of people sitting in front of fake cars and big houses and saying, you know, you can make all this money and they don't make a fucking dime. And those are more common than anything else. So don't buy into that bullshit, right? I realized I was that bullshit. And I had to go tell Lee I was that bullshit, right? That, yeah, I achieved what I achieved in the past, but I had nothing. And because I illuminated the truth to him, I didn't make excuses. I told him I was 100% accountable, and he was perfect with it. And he shared some things and illuminated things that he never had in 2 years to me because I was truthful. It vibrated the fastest, and he respected me. But that wasn't nearly as hard as what I realized later was that, oh shit, I gotta go tell my mom. I gotta go tell my mom that her golden child should have listened to her doctor, lawyer, or failure. This entrepreneurial, right, I had screwed up. And I had to be honest because of the path I was on. I had to tell her the things I was doing, how it happened, and take accountability because that's the only way that it worked. But here's the worst part. Through all the process, I forgot one thing. You guys remember why I wanted to be rich?
Buy your mom a
house. Yeah, I forgot to take my mom's house out of my name. So included in all that $100 million of property, 33 properties, a golf course, a ski mountain, motorhome, boats, my own home, I lost my mom's house. And I had to walk up to her door, tell her I was bankrupt, and that she had to move. Because I lost her house, because I was so self-absorbed, so manipulative, all the things that she had taught me not to be. I took accountability, and my mom looked at me without blinking and changed my life. Because all she said was, are you okay? Can I give you anything? Right? Do you need any money? My biggest fears had come true. I didn't want to disappoint my mom, right? I still can't tell the story without choking up, but I still can't believe here she was, and all she cared about was me. Never once, oh, where am I gonna go? Can I, right? Like all the things that were going in my head, like anger, like you left it in your name, right? Like all the things in blame, shame, I witnessed unconditional love. And I realized that her love for me and that attitude for me, that's the attitude the universe also had for me. No matter what your religion, that's the way I tell people all the time, put yourself, if any of you had kids, the best part about having kids is it actually empowers you because you know how the universe feels about you. I know parents that will pay for quarterback training before they eat. That's how much they love their children. This woman literally didn't even cross her mind anything about her. It was, how could she be of service? And that's the day that I decided that my mom and my wife, who kept telling me every day of my life, you don't get it, you're lost. And I'd look around at a house much nicer than this one even, and cars nicer than that, and go, well, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? What do you know? I'm lost? All this wouldn't be here without me. Without me. Oh yeah, it would. Because it's still there. Without me. All that stuff is still there without me. It's happening without me. But not without the universe, not without truth. My life changed very quickly because I started attracting people to teach me the lessons that I wanted once I realized this to be of service. I took an airplane to India, sitting next to a doctor, and she looked at me and she said, are you okay? And I was like, in my mind, do you know who I am? Am I okay? I'm Dave Meltzer, CEO of Lee Steinberg. Am I okay? Of course not, right? And I said, yeah, why? She goes, oh, she goes, you're just so full of light, but you're blocking it. And at that time, I'm like rolling my eyes going, oh God, this is gonna be a long flight. You know? And I said, well, what do you mean? She said, well, do you meditate? And that's when I went on my diatribe of meditate. Are you kidding me? I don't have time to meditate. People who meditate are high on their mom's couch, broke and sick all the time. I'm not gonna sit here and dream about what I want. I grew up with nothing and I'm a multimillionaire. There's no way I meditate. This is who I was. The poster child for ego. And I sat there and I said, oh, you know, literally, that's who I am. And she smirked at me like she knew something that I didn't know. And she said, oh, she goes, that's too bad because I could teach you to vibrate faster. Well, through meditation? She goes, yeah. I'm like, okay, so why would I want to vibrate faster? And she goes, well, it's simple. She goes, everything vibrates. And that piqued my curiosity because I am a math guy. Everything vibrates. She said, Earth vibrates the slowest. Never forget. Plants, animals, humans, sound, light, and then thought. She really piqued my, talk about stimulating interest. I was interested. And she goes, do you know what thought vibrates the fastest? The truth. Hairs raised on my arm. The truth, right? The truth vibrates the fastest. And then she said something that changed my life. You can only be aware of that which vibrates equal to or less than you. So you need to pursue the truth. Stop pursuing the wrong things. What was she saying? Stop shopping for the wrong things. I don't care how much money you have. If you have all the money in the world and you shop for the wrong things, you're not going to pursue the truth. You're not going to live the truth and you're not going to be happy. You're not going to be vibrating fast enough to even be aware of it. You're going to be lost. Universe kept giving me those messages. You're lost. You're lost. They put these two perfect beings in my life, my wife and my mom, to sit there that are never made a penny in their lives, barely, always, right, in my opinion, inferior to me my whole life. But yet these two women not only saved my life, but taught me the path of the truth. The truth. And it has nothing to do. It's not woo-woo bullshit. I'm talking about the truth of being able to shop. That means I want you to be profitable. People get so confused. They can't be philanthropic and be a multimillionaire. They can't be a humanitarian and be a multimillionaire. Well, I'm here to tell you the biggest philanthropist I know is Warren Buffett. Most significant impact on our earth to this date. And when he was my age at 50 years old, people gave him shit because he didn't give his money away. You know why he didn't give his money away? Because of compound interest. He's not lost. He said, oh no, I got a long game here. Every penny I give away today is worth $1,000 when I'm 80. Why would I give a penny today when I know, and not only if I make enough money and create enough profit and have enough energy and build enough credibility, not only can I give away all the billions of dollars that I have, but I can set an example by showing others to give away their billions. And that's what he did. That's what I want to do. Money's not my God, it's beneath my feet. But I am in the consistent, everyday, persistent pursuit of my truth, my potential. So how do we know what that is? That's the next question. How do we know what our potential is? Now we get to pragmatic stuff. I use, believe it or not, my calendar as my foundation to priority. In other words, prioritizing what my potential is. What does that mean? The hardest thing that I teach for other people to do that would have the most significant impact on your life is to be a student of your calendar. Don't look at your calendar, right? You look at your calendar right now. If you looked at it, I promise you in 5 minutes, you couldn't tell me what you're doing at 7 o'clock tonight, let alone tomorrow. But when you study your calendar with that lens of productivity and accessibility, and you look at how can I be of service and who do I know that could help me in person, on the phone, via email and media, radio, print, TV, and social media. When you study it, when you pay attention to something, anybody ever notice when you start paying attention consistently to something, what does it do? Anyone know? Say again?
Expands.
And?
Start seeing it more.
Start seeing it more, right? It attracts it, right? Well, that's why attention and studying things are important, because what it does is draws from the power or the field of intention. So I believe everything already exists. Past, present, and future are all one. That's why gratitude is so important, because gratitude holds your perspective. If past, present, and future are all one, and you're grateful or thankful for everything that's happened, is happening, and is going to happen, gratitude is pretty powerful. But when you pay attention and you study something, it draws from a field of intention that holds every single thing already exists. It already exists. Our job is what? To access it. How do we access it? By cleaning the connection to inspiration, to the field of intention. So in a pragmatic world, all this woo-woo bullshit comes down to, am I paying attention to what I'm doing? What activity am I doing? And how am I maximizing that in productivity and accessibility, accessing what I want, but also being accessible to others and knowing what I want. Clarity, balance, focus. When you study something, you start getting greater clarity on it. You see things you didn't see before as well, right? It raises your awareness. Awareness is so important. Awareness can save marriages because it'll teach you to go left or right. You'll never get in an argument. But even more important, awareness tells you when to buy or sell. Wouldn't that be nice? We could all be billionaires tomorrow if I had true awareness of whether to buy or sell, because I could tell you what to do with a stock or a racehorse or a, right? That's a great awareness, but it only comes from heightening our awareness, which is paying attention and harnessing the field of intention. So in the pragmatic sense, everybody laughs when I say my calendar is my foundation. Why? Because that's what holds what I'm doing, my activity. But it also holds something more important than what I'm doing. It holds what I'm not doing. I spend more time studying the white space of my calendar than actually what's already scheduled. Because I already have paid some attention to what's scheduled. I've already probably had some focus, clarity, and balance in that. But where everyone gets lost is in the white space of their calendar, which is why they don't study sleep or, you know, really put attention to their sleep. Because to them, that's, you know, 6 to 8 hours of white space. Me, that's the most valuable place. That's where I start. That's how I end up with days like today. Right? That I've gone from 4 in the morning, driving to San Diego, flying here, speeches, business development, right? Coaching, right? All this stuff. And believe it or not, I'm going to land in Orange County. Sorry, not San Diego. I have 2 houses. Orange County, and meet my son, wife, and daughters for dinner to move to a football game at 7 p.m. where I'm also going to do coaching calls during the football game. And do, right? This is all here, and I know exactly what I'm doing in my calendar because I studied it. And it comes, It's just amazing. It just comes, and it comes more and more and more, and you start trusting it more and more, which allows it, instead of putting faith that it's not going to come, which means what? You're creating resistance. The other great thing about vibration is it creates velocity. So my whole concept is, okay, profitability, purpose, passion, potential, all stemming from the calendar, studying it, right? Understanding productivity, accessibility. So now I have my day, and I say to myself, how am I going to pursue directly my potential? Consistently every day. I'm gonna take a step back, consistency. My New Year's resolution is to be more consistent. Let me tell you why. This is how the math of consistency works. Why is it, if you meditate for 2 minutes a day, is it worth more than an hour? Because of exponential permutation of math. I'll use dieting for an example. Most people diet, and this is how they diet. They diet perfectly day one, two, three, four. Day five, they go to In-N-Out Burger. Day six, they go back on it. 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Day 12, they get a big dessert. 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, they drink. So what happens? Day 31 comes, and they step on the scale, and they either weigh the same, or they've gained weight, or maybe lost a little bit. And in their mind, they say to themselves, oh my God, I can't do this anymore. I've worked so hard all month. 31 days I've been dieting. They voided the fact that they cheated three times. What's the math of what happened? 1 through 5, 1 times 2 times 3 times 4 times 5, they're doing really well, times 0. 1 times 2 times 3 times 4 times 5 times 6 times 0. Where the person that does it consistently, even if they lowered the bar and had a much easier diet, right? They actually did it 31 days, they would get the permutation of 31. 1 times 2, all the way to 31. And they'd step on a scale, even though they didn't have quite as restrictive of a diet, and they would have lost 5 to 10 pounds. That's how dieting works. It's also something that you can use with euphoria because it's an accountability partner. It provides the consistent behavior by, right? All the different things. This is why that industry is so powerful. In my industry, one of the biggest business issues is athletes go bankrupt 2.5 years after they're done playing. And it's been this way since I started in the industry. There was an article with Lee leading the way years and years ago in Sports Illustrated. You can Google it. It's still a problem today. Why? Because they're not taking care of the actual problem, which is, doesn't matter whether you use the new financial app or your financial planner or whatever, you need to consistently be disciplined with your finance, regardless of who's in charge. You're accountable. The same thing with dieting. If you want to sell your euphoria, then talk about not only the customization and the quality and all of those, talk about how it's going to allow them to stick to it. Because no matter what your diet is, no matter what the product is, almost all of them, if you stick to it daily, you're going to do really well. You got to stay consistent. So here's what happens though, and this is why, you know, these great athletes, financials, what happened to me. When you elevate yourself and your vibration and you're consistent about it and you have a trajectory based off of your calendar, right? We're all students of our calendar now. What happens is we start vibrating faster. Well, resistance is created by the ego. The need to be right, offended, separate, inferior, superior, guilty, anxious, fearful, put in any of the emotions that do. So what happens is if we're not vibrating faster, our trajectory can be off like this, and we barely see any difference in our lives, right? So we don't know. And then there's never really a big correction, but we just slowly but surely get out here, and we end up 10, 20 years later going, why don't I have what I want? Now it's too late, which by the way is complete bullshit. Like I don't care how successful Casey is at 18, I could be 70. Casey, how long have you been working for? Full time?
3 years.
Right, 3 years. Super successful in 3 years. So if I'm 70 years old and lose everything again, cancel. But if I would, why can't I do that? I got way more going for me than he does with all that experience at 70. But I meet so many 70-year-olds think it's all over. When a kid like this at 18 can do it in 3 years, come on, who cares? Age is an advantage. Anyway, we start vibrating faster. Think about your trajectory as a race car. If you're in a, Prius, you know, you can make mistakes and get back, right? You're in a Ferrari, right? And that's what I want to be, vibrating so fast. My trajectory, I'm manifesting shit every day like this. Well, here's the problem. If my ego gets in my way when I'm manifesting stuff like this, and I'm putting faith instead of in my potential and the truth, and I start putting faith into cocaine, into, right? Watch how far and fast you can fuck yourself up. Whoa. So many people, they're misanalyzing things because they're looking at people driving Priuses going, oh, well, he's doing that. Well, you don't see any results. But meanwhile, if you're on a true vibration, on the truth, and you are ego-driven, you got to get back to center. And the most important part of vibrating faster and meditating is not just understanding, you know, that ability to be more aware, but it's knowing where your baseline is. Here's what happens to a lot of people. It's like a car on top of a hill in San Francisco. They start their day, and the car's sitting up on top of that hill, and it starts rolling down. Now, what I do is if I ever feel my car start rolling down the hill off my trajectory, I stop everything, and I take one finger, because that's all the energy it takes, and I put it back on top of the hill. You can hold a car on top of a hill in San Francisco with one finger. But what most people do is they let that car start coming down the hill. And not only do they let a car come down the hill, they start putting faith into why it's going down the hill. Oh, yeah, you know, they cheated me. Oh, you know, there's not enough. All the negative things, inferiority, superiority, whatever. And then what happens is they come home at the end of the day and they're with the most important people in their lives and they try to stop the car and they wonder why they feel run over every single day. So my thing is vibrate so fast. But know, because everyone does it, right? I'm the biggest hypocrite in the world because I'm teaching this shit and I'm still fighting it myself, just so you know. I'm fighting it myself. There's tons of times. The only difference is I get back to center faster than I ever have. I put myself right back onto the trajectory and I have an interesting tool called forgiveness that I use. I don't ever forgive anyone else. I don't ever. Nobody deserves my forgiveness. I do. I deserve to forgive you. That's why I forgive people. I need to forgive myself. Who here has ever made a mistake? Raise your hand. Okay, good. Who here has made a mistake today? Anyone not make a mistake today at 206? No mistakes? Oh, I'm gonna say you just made one by raising your hand. Okay. Here's what's so powerful about mistakes. This blows my mind. Every one of us has made a mistake. In fact, everyone has made a mistake today already. Think about how much time, money, resources, and relationships we have wasted and lost because we have put judgment upon somebody else for making a mistake. Now I'll tell you why forgiveness is so important. Think about how much time, money, resources, and relationships that we have lost or wasted because we have made a mistake and blamed other people. That is why forgiveness is so important. Forgiveness. We're all hypocrites. We're just doing our best. What am I doing? Just like you, I'm pursuing my potential. Never once will I ever tell you I've reached my potential. I'm just in the pursuit of my potential. I'm doing my best. And my best is getting better and better at pursuing it. I'm able to get to more and more without attaching my happiness to the final outcome. I'm enjoying the consistent, persistent pursuit of my potential. That's happiness to me. Can I enjoy the consistent, persistent pursuit of my... Can I get fired up about taking the trash out? Can I get fired up about being productive? So many people that are entrepreneurs... Number one, don't realize you can be an entrepreneur within a big organization. If I was young, I was telling John, who's an expert at direct selling, I said, if I was young and had no money and I wanted to make a lot of money, I would either be in direct selling or sell insurance. Because if you literally stick to it consistently, persistently, enjoy the pursuit of that potential, in 10 years, you will be an annuitized millionaire. Everybody knows what that means, right? You have millions of dollars coming without doing anything. Guaranteed. Those are the two professions. You don't need any cash. All you need to know is willpower and ask people, how can I be of service and do you know anyone that can help me? In person, on the phone, via email and social media. Use your alter ego. You'll be even more statistically successful in asking those questions, but you will make money. Period. You're an entrepreneur pursuing your potential. Gratitude will help, accountability, forgiveness, and then finally, effective communication. So, effective communication. Number one, we communicate two ways. The analogy that I give is we're like a radio. Okay, all of us are like a radio, and there's two things that we want to do. Number one, we want to receive as much as we can. Now, the interesting thing is everyone loves to give. Who here loves to give? Who here loves to receive? I always wish you could see this side, because when I ask people they love to give, everyone's bam. When I ask to receive, it's like, oh yeah. And some didn't raise their hand. But we all have actually more of resistance to receiving and to giving. In fact, when I teach people to be empowered and to pursue their potential, the majority of my time is making them feel worthy, not guilty, to be able to capacity to receive, to believe that they can receive, to believe that they're worthy of receiving, that receive enough. Because when things happen for you, like my dad's jacket, there isn't. There's only just enough for you. But through effective communication and receiving, everything comes through me. I add value to it, appreciate, gratitude, and then give it away. So the more I can receive, right, through that, the more I receive, I have to have big antenna or a big satellite so I can receive more and more. And then if I allow it to come through me and add value, then I can project it. And what do I want with my projection? In order to give, I want it to, and this is applicable to his Instagram, you want it to vibrate the fastest. You want it to have not only the strongest frequency, so it reaches as many channels as possible, right? The last thing you want to do is just hit, you know, 18-year-old white males, right? I want to hit everybody. So I want to have it to have breadth, depth, and strength. So how do I have that? Well, you can't give what you don't have. Can't give what you don't have. Forgiveness, money, all that, right? I cannot be poor enough to make you rich. I cannot be sick enough to make you well. I can't give you what I don't have. So we gotta focus in on what? Receiving. That's where the problem. So I look to see not only the depth, breadth, strength of what I'm gonna give, but more importantly, I gotta make sure my connection to receiving, effective communication, I cannot empower you unless I'm living every day in this trajectory of being empowered. I need to make sure that my connection is not corroded with ego-based emotions. Need to be right, need to be offended, superior, inferior, separate, guilty, fearful, all those different things. I need to really focus in on, first, receiving. Now, most people don't want to receive because they do. They feel guilty. I had a huge problem. The reason I went bankrupt is that my mom made $17,000 a year, sacrificed, worked two jobs. She would work as a teacher, come home, load us up into a country squire station wagon with a peanut butter and jelly brown bag packed dinner and filled up turnstiles at the 7-Eleven when my older siblings would read to the younger siblings. And so when I made $10 million in a year, I felt filthy. I wasn't worthy of it. For the right reasons, because I love my mom and I appreciate, but in my mind, I wasn't better than my mom. I still was stuck in ego, inferior, superior. Here was this wonderful woman that sacrificed someone. So I felt shame. I also felt shame because I wasn't earning it in the most honest way, right? I was selling by overselling, back-end selling, manipulating people, even lying to them at times so I could make more money, thinking, well, I'm doing good things with it. I'm buying houses for my mom. I'm giving it to charity. Yeah, but I also was doing bad things with it as well. I was shopping with the wrong stuff, big houses and Ferraris and, right? So what did I do? All this circled in and it corroded my connection. So we got to start with that receiving, which is why the profitability side, you have to re-engineer purpose from the profitability and then to the passion side. You have to look and say, am I living my life on purpose? Right? And it's that why, but it's more than the why, in my opinion. Number one, it's the what. People, you know, a whole bunch of books out there, get your why, find your why, know your why. I get the inspiration of the why, but it's truly first, excuse my language, find what the fuck you want. It pisses me off so many times. I'm like, okay, what do you want? Everyone's had a six-year-old, drives you nuts. Well, I have a whole bunch of millennials out there, and I'm like, what do you want, dude? What do you want? You got a following, but what do you really want? You can't tell me. What do you want? Then I can know what. Once I know what I want, you have a mathematical advantage. The minute you know what you want, it's a possibility in your life. There's been all kinds of crazy shit when people decide what they want. Roger Bannister is always my favorite because he wanted to run a mile in less than 4 minutes. And in the history of the world, nobody could ever do it. In fact, there was physicians at Oxford, where he went to school, one of the best schools in the world, that said it's humanly impossible, physiologically impossible for the human body to run that fast. But the amazing thing is, once he fucking ran a 4 minute mile, yeah, 2 weeks later, another guy did, and by 2 months, like six guys did. Know what you want. It's a possibility. Then where's the why comes in. Look at your values, your personal values, your experiential values, your giving values and receiving values. Do not have to be balanced every day. That's not true. Some days you need 90% receiving. Some days 90% giving. Some days 90% personal. But at the end of your life, let it be balanced. That'll give you clarity, balance, and focus of why you want it, and then you can become inspired. And when you become inspired with the why, your inspiration in spirit, right? I look for words within, intellectual, inspiration, intuition. Go look up all the N words. It's going to help you figure out how to live your life. I could write a book about the N words. But the why, here's the cool mathematical advantage. But when you know your why, it's a probability. That's a big mathematical advantage, and you haven't done anything except for got your mind straight. Now, the easy part is the how. Discipline, strategy, and awareness are the how. And that can be effectuated over time with all these student your calendar, do it now, right? The no rule, all these little pragmatic things, consistent, persistent pursuit, getting back to center, meditation, all these different things, take your why and make it your reality, your perspective, possibility to probability to perspective, and your individual perspective is your reality. You give meaning to everything you see. And I proved it. One of the first examples was with trash. I gave meaning to trash, and I turned it into something amazing in my life instead of the negative karma, which I gave it meaning before. Try to push yourself on that, you know, why to the perspective of giving it the meaning you want. It's not that easy because it's on that receiver. I'm corroding my connection when I'm not giving it the meaning I want. I can take any problem you have and turn it into an advantage for you. But that's my perspective. It's not going to help you until you believe it. You can manifest everything that you want. And the more you practice it, the better you'll get. I think there's a perfect combination between the pragmatic world and this woo-woo or spiritual world. I believe that we have to connect here first. All that inspiration. One of the number one things I'm asked for in my Q&A for the days and live and all that is, how are you so inspired every day? Because if I'm not, I go back to center first. I don't try to do any. I don't try to stop the car at the end of the day and wonder why I'm run over. I just stayed inspired. And then you realize that time is a man-made construct, because there's a difference between inspired time and uninspired time. There's a difference between inspired activity and uninspired activity. In spirit, intuition, intellect, all these different things that are incongruent with non-spiritual life, meaning non-connected and not, right? How long, all of us have been in class, how long is a 2-hour lecture that you hate?
10.
And how fast did that your favorite movie go by? It's that simple.